Hey guys, welcome back to the Detour Live. I'm your host Dan Jones and joined as always by four-time national road champion from Australia, Johnny Trevorrow. Now John, we've had 15 stages down now of the Tour de France. It was obviously a big stage yesterday, finishing in Andorra. There was four climbs and we posed the question before the start, will any of the GC rivals put time into the POG? And it looks like he's picking his nose, mate. He hasn't cracked. And I said on Mont Ventoux, don't build it up. He's fine. It's under control. And it's going to take a lot to pull this one away from today, Pogacar.
Everyone loves a bit of, you know, a bit of controversy. So the fact that he was a little hint.
Yeah, it was good.
Blow the water. That's exactly. Look, He's the best bike rider here. And I don't think anyone really thought it. All this stuff about the heat. Oh. He said one thing. He said, "I don't like it so much, but it's hot." We've never seen a bad ride for him through the heat. But everyone was grabbing at that.
Oh yeah, you
know, he did it easy. I mean, he was left unprotected. I like the way that the teams had a go. They actually had a go independently. Bang bang.
Oh, yeah.
It was good enough to close them down. I noticed that when it did ease, whenever it eased a little bit, Ben O'Connor would go whack up the road too. So I was impressed with Ben. On his home roads, as he said. Yeah, there he is there.
He's obviously excited because his parents were there for the first time, as we said.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story, yeah. But then when the big hitters went bang over the top of Project, Poggy had to sort of close it down. He lost a bit, but he just stayed in, didn't go too far in the red, got him over the top. He was very good. So, yeah. He's only 30 seconds from second place, Ben, so he's still in the chance. But you know who really surprised me? Impressed me again. Wout van Aert. Wout. Get it right. I mean, he's in the break. He probably could have gone close to win the stage, but he's, you know, Sepp goes up the road. He goes back, drops back the 5 minutes to help Vinegar Guard, I'm not going to use that slang name for him again because I've been repped over the knuckles. And fair enough, too. It's disrespectful. So, Jonas Vinegar Guard. I'll get it right.
See, this is why John uses nicknames. It's not out of disrespect. He literally can't spit it out. He can't. He tries.
Anyway, he was good. He was good yesterday.
What about the V-Man? The V-Man, that's easy.
Yeah, the V man, that'll do. Yeah, we've got that other V man, Verde.
He was good as well.
Yeah, very good, very good. I thought he might actually catch Sepp because he's a very good descender, but he said he wasn't prepared to put it all on the line and risk crashing, so he didn't do that. But yeah, he was really good. Wout Poels, very good too, took over the King of the Mountains. We had two bike races going on. We had one up the front. Because it was a big break, 32 riders up the road, a lot of strong riders in there, you know, a lot of mountain climbers in there, you know, with Quintana, Woods, you know, Poels. They're all, and I see that Wout is having a go for the King of the Mountains as well. He's only a handful of points down as well. So interesting to see what he does with that.
Call him Vinny. Now, Sam Bewley has commented, because what was the nickname, Iffy? Now he's trying to bait you. Now, Billy, I'll send you the link. Why don't you jump on the show, Bills? Because we obviously talked about the stage for I think it was 3.5 hours last night.
Yeah, well,
territory.
That's right. He's a resident of Andorra, so he'll know all of those roads really well. So we'd love to have a chat.
I'll send him a link and see. This is what we call podcast fishing, guys. We've dangled the rung and we'll see if we can hook one. Now, Jason from the Maldives says, "Good afternoon, gents. Great to see Ben having a go. Seems that the second tier racing for second and third. The song for Dan, I have done all the dumb things." we're building up
story
for a medley.
Story of his life. Exactly.
We're building up for a medley on the last day.
Yep. We are. It's going to be good. Now, I was also Bling. He got up the road, won that, got that preem, 20 points back. I mean, he's still, you know, 72 points down or something. But he's doing it as he did last time, race for second, and you never know what could happen. I don't think Cav is going to miss a time getting there. That was the hardest stage, especially because of the climb, 18 k's of climbing straight away. He withstood that, and And now he's got rest day today, you know, sort of an in-between day. Ah, here he is.
Joined by Olympic gold medalist and Olympic commentator Scott McGrory, regular panel member on the Detour. But really, the build-up to the end of the tour now, we need to get you match fit, mate. The Olympics is, what, 12 days away. We need to get you, get the vocal cords going, getting used to critiquing, commentating, and you should be cherry ripe for Tokyo.
Hey mate, I'm okay with critiquing. I've got plenty of critique. Don't worry about that. But the other stuff, yeah, you get into a bit of a rhythm. So maybe the first day could be a little bit rusty. Who knows? Hopefully not. But yeah, it's all about research now.
Your audio is crisp. Have you got the Apple iPods working?
No, I've gone through the computer. I've had so what you guys are aware of that no one else at home. With obviously everything going down in New South Wales, I've been on a 5-day round trip to get up north. And then get back down again before the New South Wales border lockdown, which was all above board and correct, and I did. But while I was up there, I picked up my computer that was being repaired in time for the game. So I'm back on a laptop, so it's all working well.
It's all covered up, Apples. And now we've got Sam Bewley, who's joined the show.
Brilliant. Morning, boys.
Hey, Apples. How are you, mate?
What was that nickname, Effie?
Vinny.
Vinny. We're not allowed to say it anymore.
I've been banned.
Told to pull his head in. And while we're in the mood of just bringing in guests, we build it up for a couple of days now. We've talked about the Kadeka Foundation, and it has been the Phil Liggett show. But Phil is not the best Liggett character, I'd have to argue, John. There's a better character under the Liggett name. And if anyone has seen the Voice of Cycling documentary, I mean, she steals the show. There's no other way to look at it. What else could you say about our special guest, John?
Well, I first met her back in 1973 when she was the right-hand lady for what's his name? I've forgotten him already.
Oh, great intro.
Rob Webb, who organised a whole season for us, and she was his Girl Friday, and we've been mates ever since. She was a seriously good soigneur, masseur, all of that, and rubbed me up the wrong way a few times, but I had a lot of fun. Looked after us.
This is the worst intro I've ever heard. It's the worst intro I've ever heard.
In Olympic speed skater, so she's a very talented lady, and now a very much rhino. What's the word? Crusader, a rhino crusader.
And it is, of course, Trish Liggett. Now, Trish, apologies. That intro was terrible. How are you going, Trish? Are you someone that gets excited when the Tour de France is on, or is it one of those races where it's a bit of a, well, we know we have got to do it and be embedded in it, let's just get through it?
No, I'm a real sports fan, actually, in pretty much all sports, and I'm always watching Tour. I know I don't get Phil's commentary anymore, but I do get ITV4 occasionally, which I just turn the sound down a little bit. But actually, I follow it. Yeah, I try to follow the races. I enjoy following the races. I think I'm partly involved sometimes, I must feel. I feel as though I'm involved half the time, especially with Phil being so involved.
Mm.
But yeah, I watch, praying for Cav all the time, and he got in yesterday, last man. But nevertheless, he got in, so that was the main thing.
Now, I wasn't joking when I said in the intro that you were the star of the documentary, The Voice of Cycling, because it really gave us a window into what it is like, you know, living the lifestyle in terms of you balance a lot of time in South Africa, in the UK. Where did that passion for South Africa and particularly conservation, where did that all start?
Well, actually, we started going over to South Africa by invite because Phil was asked to commentate on the Cape Town Cycle Tour, and that was in 1989. I think you can say quite clearly that we're both animal lovers, we're both bird lovers, we're both outdoor lovers. You know, so I've always been involved in the outdoors. I hadn't really been involved directly with the charity or anything like that before. Well found. Oh, my goodness, that's in Monato.
That's just a random photo I stole off Google.
Oh, good Lord.
I think it was in Ballarat.
Monato, actually, a few years ago. I'm sure it's Monato. No, actually,
that's a better one.
Yeah, that's me as patron, or I'm one of the trustees of Helping Rhinos. But we're going back to where it started. It was really the Cape Town Cycle Tour and meeting people in Africa, going on a safari there, becoming involved, getting ourselves a property there in the end after several years, many years actually, and always enjoying it up there and, you know, having spent a lot of time with rangers, wildlife, etc. I just took it on, and that photograph there is with Simon Jones. I was teaching photography, actually, in a wildlife park locally and met Simon, or got involved with Simon, and then going to see him. We had the contacts. He started a Helping Rhinos charity and asked me to be on board as a trustee virtually immediately. So I've been with them 7 years, and during that time, Freedom to Roam Adventures has just been an idea I've sort of pushed together at this point. So. Yeah, that's how it actually started. But I just think when you start seeing all the dreadful things that are happening, unfortunately, and then you have to understand the reasons why, rather than moan about it all the time, the best thing to do is be involved with it, and then maybe you can do something. However small that is, you can do something to help.
Iffy?
Now, we'll go into some detail of some of your other sporting achievements shortly, but when you contacted me the other day, you're talking about some new endeavours that you're hoping to do later on the year. So can you tell us a bit about those?
Yeah, the first thing was the series that you guys got involved in, you're pushing for Kereka, it has been quite successful. We're still pushing for that 35,000, we know that. But we've been in contact with all the people that were involved in that particular ride. It was well over 100 of them, which was really good. And they were so enthusiastic and so like the idea of a community sort of idea, learning more about the wildlife, learning more about the reserve and other things in nature, if you like, the environment, knowing a little bit deeper. So that was very much the aim of Freedom to Roam Adventures. But because of that success there, and because everybody, you know, enjoyed it so much, they wanted more, we're now planning four more rides. We will have some new rides, actually. We're going to film in Kereka again. And we'll be doing one a month from September through to December. So that really, it was COVID that really sort of set this into real motion, because we had a group of people, 16, going to the game reserve for live. And they will be, or haven't yet, but they've certainly deposited a fair amount of money already, and we're very much hoping that event will go ahead. But because of the difficulties with Kereka, COVID, etc., and Phil did something with Full Gas, we thought, well, what a good idea it would be if we actually got some filming done in Kereka and pushed it out online, and everybody pulled very, very quickly. So that's one major project. And then there'll be plenty more, of course, but particularly with regard to Australia. I know Phil mentioned yesterday, I actually do have heritage in Australia. I often wonder what I would have done if we'd never have left Australia. I've probably been a horsewoman in the middle of the outback or something. I think I love big wide open spaces. So I'm very at home.
You want to be a camel driver?
Well, you never know. I can easily turn my hand to a lot of things. I think, you know, I get stimulated by an idea and then start pushing the idea. And Phil says I'm like a bloody Jack Russell. I never drop it until it's done. He's probably right. I tend to do that with most things. But Australia's also on our list. We are ambassadors for Koala Life. Professor Chris Daniels is not in charge of that now, but he's in charge now for the South Australian government on expanding the environmental knowledge, if you like, in the green spaces in Adelaide. Fantastic guy. And we said we'd like to do some live rides and also some online Full Gas rides for them in January to coincide with Tour Down Under, and also for Monato, who've got a rhino project. It's the Australian rhino project, actually, and they are really ready for that. And John, I think you know, and Jerry, certainly I've got Jerry involved in Monato as well, which is just phenomenal. And it's a fantastic place. And you'll have rhinos, more rhinos than you have already, but there are a safeguard population of rhinos that are coming from Africa, having to quarantine in New Zealand for a year before they get up to Monato. But now with COVID, another year and a half or 2 years is gone. So I don't know where that project is right now, but Elaine Benstead, who's the CEO of Monato, will certainly know exactly where it is at the moment. So, hey, yeah, quite a lot planned.
We've got a comment from Free Ranger. He wants to know, how can we get the message across that Rhino Horn contains no more magical properties than a fingernail?
And that's a good point, Dan. I've got a very good photograph I took a while back because they cut a rhino horn in Monarto, actually. The rhino got his horn caught on something. They cut it and I photographed it, and it was used on Helping Rhino's website right the way out there. And in all conservation conversations, to be frank, they do say rhino horn is keratin. At the end of the day, it's the same as your hair, same as your fingernails, and you grind it down. And you put it in a drink, you take it in food, but you ingest it and they think it's an elixir of existence. And unfortunately, Dan, sometimes myths in certain countries are very, very, very difficult to break. They think something's got medical properties. It doesn't even matter if it has no medical properties. It's like lots of things. If you believe it enough, you almost believe it does, and you can actually mentally teach yourself that it's doing you good. And in the end, it could do you good. That's unfortunate in the way it is.
Stuart McIntosh says, Trish, what continues to drive the demand for ivory and poaching when the ivory trade is officially banned? The ban doesn't seem to be working. What needs to change?
I think the whole thing comes down to education on the one hand, but on the other, what's important is so many people in countries have no money, and poaching creates a mass of money. Even the poacher themselves doesn't get very much money, but the trader in dealing, getting it out to the Asias or whatever, definitely has a lot of money involved. Basically you're talking $100,000 for, you know, an ounce of rhino horn. And so that makes people think it's important and makes it think it must do you good. But unfortunately, governments need to ban. CITES came and, you know, elephants, ivory was banned for a very long time, and then they've allowed it back in again. It's like, I can't believe it. I just don't know, Dan, to be honest. I mean, education, teaching people is as deeply as you can go. Giving fines to the poachers is almost a joke. I know that in Africa particularly, the poachers get very, very little for what they do, and they are incredibly clever, those guys. They really are master trackers. I mean, they're amazing. But they're armed with all this expensive equipment given to them, and there's sort of no fear. When one poacher gets killed, they think, oh, it's a dozen more. And life is cheapish in some countries, and they'll do it just to be important. They'll do it to have gold around their neck, a bigger car, to have a big house in the township. And, you know, it's a very, very difficult one because it's involved with community hugely. But what we do have on our reserve on Rihi, which is up north near Limpopo, and all the areas around the Bululi section, which is a large group of 55,000 hectare reserve, we have a team of local ladies. They're called the Black Mambas, and they patrol the fence lines. They have, some of them are armed. They are answerable to a bigger ranger on the whole, but they walk the fence lines on a daily basis. And the key thing about them is they're educating the kids, their kids, and there's bush baby schools in near game reserves that teach the youngsters much more about the importance of the animals and that it can be their future. So we're trying to change that whole concept of animals are your friends, they're not your enemies. And it's difficult with farming and things like this going on when rhinos or elephants particularly wander into the farmland and they trample everything down, and then, of course, they're hated. And then lions, so it's a communication. It's a people animal thing. And I don't quite know how we get across it.
Hey, Sam, I want to ask you, you did a number of training camps with the Orica Greenedge team in South Africa and went across to Kruger National Park. Once you see these animals in the wild up close, does it change your whole perception when you hear about issues and so forth, the fact that you've experienced it in the wild?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, we saw these animals. I didn't see a rhino, but I saw, you know, a lot of animals in the Kruger National Park. And I guess in a way it's kind of, it sucks a little bit that we saw them in a park. I understand that their park is thousands and thousands and thousands of acres, but they're still in a sense in an area they've been had to be put in an area that where they're safe to avoid poaching and to avoid people being able to come in and do what they're, or try to combat that at least. But yeah, it's amazing. Like, I think when you go to those countries, and I guess those animals are foreign animals for the better part of the world, And when you can, when you do get the privilege of being able to see them in the wild, it's, it is amazing. And it's sad that a lot of these animals are in the position that they're in because of the reasons that Trish spoke about. So yeah, let's hope that we can continue to combat that and things can improve.
You know, just coming in here, because if we care to cast our mind back quite a long way to the 1800s and early 1900s, when it was the popular thing for Americans, not Australians necessarily, actually probably doubtful Australians, the country was still just about coming onto life at that point. But I mean, the UK people used to go out and hunt these animals, and it was a fame, you know, it was a really prestigious thing to do, to come home with a elephant tusk or a rhino horn or something like that. You've shot it. So it's very unfortunate that the whole culture is wrong, if I should put it that way. The culture is incorrect in that it's seen as, if you want to use black and white, it's seen as white man's sport. And then the reserve started because populations got bigger, animals were being shot right, left and centre, so they had to close them in order. Paul Kruger created the Kruger National Park in, started out at the end of the 1800s, actually, and then it went into the 1900s and wasn't officially a park until, I think it was the very early 50s, it may be a bit earlier than that. I must read the information again, but then they had to be confined because of the rampaging killing. Impala were by their millions, as you, when the Brits used to go to Kenya really early in the 1800s, they'd see millions of impala just running wild everywhere, and now there's none. You know, I mean, there's impala and there are a lot of them, but they're all confined, as you rightly say. And yes, it is wrong, but you've got to get humans living with animals in a way where they don't want to destroy each other. And unfortunately, I'm not quite sure how we do that.
So we've obviously been on this show, you know, trying to promote the Kareka Foundation and the Peloton, but like, we're coming into the last week. We haven't hit the 35 grand target. But when we had Lindy on the other week, she was talking about, you know, the effects of COVID, but this money, what effect does it have, Trish? Any donation to this cause, how important is it?
I can tell you it is 100% vital. It's going to be quite tough for me just for a minute. Kareka will not be able to exist without it. Mm. Actually getting to the point where they are desperate. They've had no visitors for 18 months. They're a fantastic family-run reserve. They rely on their integrity and their ability to create tourism and have people coming in, having an absolutely amazing time there. And that is what funds Kareka. They don't have big donations and donors from other countries or from big companies like banks and so on. They've always been self-sufficient. They help the local community immensely by giving food, by training people in the education side. They have many rangers from the local communities that have trained up with them and now work with them. All of that stopped. Pretty much the anti-poaching unit's virtually on its knees now because they it's an expensive game, unfortunately. It really is. So in all truth, I mean, you can't beg enough. Every charity in the world is asking for money. Everybody is being pressured to give money to charities, and one has to make decisions as to where that money goes. But this wildlife is inherent, and the environment is vital for the planet as a whole. I know it's a different thing. I'm just looking at the thing as with a huge, great big picture. And without the animals on the planet, without the environment being able to be balanced in some form of a state of being balanced with the plants, the insects, the trees, and everything, and people so don't realize the value of the animals. And so therefore they don't mean anything to them. And that very much is why Freedom to Roam Adventures was formed. It was an idea I had to bring the people to understand a little bit more and enjoy the environment for all it is there for. So in all truth, without the money and without the support that Kareka needs, Kareka is in dire danger. And they're looking to expand their reserve at the moment. And if I look at it another way, South Africa is probably one of the only countries in the world that's increasing its wildlife and not losing it all. And they've got the iconic creatures that has not, virtually none of them left anywhere else in the world. So I do think the world needs to help Africa.
For sure. Iffy?
Yeah, we're on board. So you just keep giving us the information, and we'll start and we'll keep promoting it, Trish. And well, Dan and I have already dubbed ourselves in. We're doing the next full gas ride. And anyone who hasn't seen any of those, it's fantastic.
I've got breaking news.
These new rides, they're going to be one a month from September. And we're actually asking all the people who came on the first ones what time zones to use and what day of the week suits. So we're going to go with the majority. So that will be out in a couple of weeks. So if you keep an eye, certainly in 2 to 3 weeks' time on the careerco.co.za/Peloton, it will change and update. So it's your key really to keep reminding yourself. And actually, Dan, you showed a few of the little films on the side the other week or last week or something. And Phil had not seen them. And he was totally moved by those. Please look at those little videos. It gives us a real reason why we do what we're doing.
Breaking news.
Okay. This is breaking news. We've got some mates on this show. And Jason from the Maldives, as we know, Bules, on the Social Distance podcast, is a legend. He has offered... And everyone that donates in this last week will go into the draw. 5 nights in an underwater pool villa on the Miller Resort, including breakfast and dinner, valued at $10,000. Anyone who donates in the last week goes into the draw. And that's from Jason. That's US $10,000. He's offered that. Anyone that donates will go into the draw for that week at the Maldives. And it is an immaculate resort, and that's an overwater pool villas. So, fantastic. So,
wow. We'll put that up. Yeah. So that's wonderful. Wonderful news.
Absolutely.
So all you have to do is just donate anything. You'll go into the draw, and we'll get a list of the donations, and we'll randomly select a winner.
Yeah.
That is careerca.co.za/Peloton, K-A-R-I-E-G-A. .co.za/Peloton and get behind it, because as Trish said, there's a lot more rides that are coming up. It's a great cause, and it's really crunch time. So don't wait. Then go, maybe I'll donate in a month. Do it now. And if you do it in the last week, you could win that amazing prize. So we've got a lot of support.
Yeah. Just remember I'm the Jack Russell that shakes it till there's nothing left.
That's so. It. That's it.
And so we want it.
Exactly. Right. And we'll get Jace on during the week, and he can talk in more detail. But Trish, it's been fantastic. We're going to continue to push the foundation, obviously, because we're on board. We believe in it, and we want to make any sort of impact we can. And we know that the cycling community is a passionate bunch, and they will get behind it. And let's just see what happens in the last week. Hopefully some more donations come in. And chapeau to you and Phil as well, because you guys are fantastic with all the work that you do for various foundations and conservation. It's awesome. And that was obviously a big part of the documentary. And it is exciting to know what effect that will have now that it is being released in the UK and people get to see the passion for what it is, you know. I think it's exciting.
The helicopter rides were fun right along the riverbed. That was pretty incredible. And I'm holding on to the inside. They've taken the windows out or the doors out. So I'm sort of, the pilot says to me, "What's up, Trish?" So I'm saying, he said, "You look a bit nervous." I said, "Well, there's no window, there's no door. And I didn't know quite where to put my hands." He said, "Just put them in your lap." He said, "It's fine. You won't fall out." And then he tips it every different way, which, and it's like, oh my goodness, this was a pretty amazing experience. And the guy that took us up there, Jerry, his name is, and he's apparently the king of all of the anti-poaching helicopter stuff. He does all the darting and all of that. And to be part of that and be involved in that is an experience you'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thanks for joining us, Trish. We've got to unpack the tour, but we'll keep the donations coming, and loved having you on the show.
Thanks very much. And we're going to start talking tour, otherwise everybody will get fed up. So thank you, good. Guys. And I'm really, really grateful to all your support. Been absolutely marvellous.
No
so
worries.
Ears are on me when we finally get back to Australia.
For sure. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, Trish. See you,
Trish. Legend. Trish Liggett, as we said, great cause. Keep those donations coming. And, thanks again to Jace at the Miller Resorts as well for that fantastic prize. Boys, we're just going to quickly flash up the ad video, and then we're going to unpack a bit of stuff from the Tour de France yesterday and Ify's Giro Donna wrap-up as well. Here's a quick word from our great mates at Let's Go Motorhomes and Bike Exchange.
The Let's Go Motorhomes app has everything at the tip of your finger. From car parks to campgrounds, tips and tricks, the app makes your road trip smoother. This is the way to go. Download the Let's Go Motorhomes app today.
Look at this bike. You think it's just a bike, right? But it's not. It's a bike. 374 people are looking at. This guy, this girl, them, all looking at it. People from here, there, and wherever this is. People that are looking for a bike. Or just a piece of it. Amateurs, semi-amateurs, and pro-amateurs. This guy wants this bike, but with this crank and these bars. This could be the perfect match. But not this one. This girl has a bike to sell, and thousands of people might purchase it. Eyes on Bikes help grow small businesses. His, hers, yours, and the latest data and insights help those businesses keep moving. We are the world's number one bike marketplace, with over 500,000 products and 900 brands, where buyers and sellers are brought together in a place where a bike is never just a bike. Bike Exchange, where the world buys, sells, learns, and rides.
Thanks again to Let's Go Motorhomes and Bike Exchange. And John, do you want to announce the winner of the best contributor, $500 Let's Go Motorhome voucher with zero prep?
I give it to Wheel Wizard. He's been sensational.
Wheel Wizard. His weather report. His weather report yesterday was a bit off. He said, it's only 20 degrees on the Andorra stage. But at one point there, I think leading into it, it was about 30. And riders are having the ice bars, and it was a bit off there. But Bills, obviously, they are your home roads, mate. Yesterday, what did you think of the stage?
It wasn't as exciting, I suppose, and as I thought it might be for the GC riders. They are my home roads. I know the roads very well. I was speaking to you last night, your time when we were watching the stage, Jones, and I was pointing out my house and. I actually rode on those roads a couple of days ago, and it was a hard stage. Obviously, as we saw in that last climb, it's really hard. It's one of the hardest climbs in Andorra, in a country that has plenty of them. but the GC group, great win by Seb Kuss, of course. But yeah, the GC group, I thought the climb would have made more of a difference, but in the end, it didn't. They rode to the finish together.
What impressed you the most out of Sepp's ride? Because you tweeted about it and you got like 10 retweets. I thought, that's a good one, Bills.
It's not bad when you've only got a couple of thousand followers. Like, it's percentage-wise, it's not bad.
Well, your account was stolen.
It was stolen. I lost it in a Bitcoin hack a number of months ago. but I loved it when he threw his sunglasses. Apparently, it's not the first time it's happened. I think Sagan did it at the World Champs in Richmond. And Oliver... or one of the Nathan brothers did it when he won the Belgian champs, apparently, as they said on Twitter. But I loved it when he just biffed his sunglasses into the crowd. It was like a mic drop. It was the cycling version of a mic drop. Just like, poof, I don't need these anymore. Won the stage.
I saw that. I noticed that. I thought he didn't pay retail for those, did he, Scooter?
No, but I do wonder how the sponsors how that situation goes, because they're not on his eye, on his face when he goes across the line, or they're not tucked in the jersey, or like it was a good thing that he, like it was a cool thing that he did.
I reckon he got more publicity for the sunglasses than just keeping them on. I'm sure everyone's been talking about
the parents of the child that the glasses hit in the eye, apparently suing him though. So you'll have to deal with that.
Scooter, what were the impressive performances on yesterday's stage for you?
Most impressive performance yesterday. Now, Sepp obviously put in a great ride, and we know he said it himself that he'd been really struggling. He hasn't had the form that he was hoping coming in. So it's just great to see someone persevere, get through. Get through. He's still going to get through on the days if he's losing lots of time, better than, say, the sprinters and the lead-out guys would be getting through on those hilly stages earlier, say, in the Alps. But, it's just great to see, riders. And it's the nature of Grand Tours, isn't it? If you have a crash or you get sick or something happens early on, you just have to keep going. Maybe, who knows, in a week, in 2 weeks, your day will come. or may come, and for Sepp it did. So I really do enjoy that. But the most outstanding performance on the day was how crap Martin is at descending. You know, a guy that was sitting second in overall and just didn't stick with the GC group on the descent, and then blew up on the next climb after all the chasing and has dropped down the overall classification. So Guillaume Martin, his lack of descending skills in a professional level sport, I felt was outstanding.
Bring with Michael Woods, even Michael Woods together. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and just watch them bounce off each other all the way down. Look, Woodsy. The thing is with Michael is he really knows it. He came to the sport really late, and he understands it. And he, you know, I think he's really trying hard to get better. Whereas, you know, that wasn't a tricky descent either. It just wasn't a tricky descent. He lost the wheel, couldn't get back on. You know, normally in a situation like that, you are able to in tighter corners, you should be able to close in because there's still that Constantina effect, as we all know, at the back of the group. So you should be able to catch a little bit on each corner. And he just kept doing the opposite. So it was, yeah, I thought that was really impressive how shit he was.
Bill's like,
I was going to say, it's been really, really windy up the top of that path, Port Dean Valero. I live about 5K from the top of the climb there, or the descent yesterday. And it's been unseasonably windy, like unbelievably windy. And like you say, Scooter, it's a really simple descent. The first 4 or 5K has some hairpins, but it's a massive, massive wide road. It's the, you know, they've just crossed the border. It's the main vein into Andorra from France. It's a huge wide road. It's not technical, but I guess he was and suffering in the wind. It has been crazy windy out there, like really actually quite hard to be stable on the bike. And that was obviously his issue, was scared in the wind. And after that 4 or 5K with the hairpins, it's so straight. It's a peddling descent. If you've lost the wheel and you've lost time in that first 4 or 5K through the technical section, there's no way you can go faster than a bunch down that descent by yourself, because it is it's a headwind all year up there. It's a headwind. It's flat. It's a peddling descent. So if you're 20 seconds behind, that quickly becomes much further.
Yeah, and that cooked him, didn't it, for the next climb. So he wasn't able to ride himself back on when they got onto the next hill, which was, you know, much steeper and harder. So disappointing for him, because I really would like to see a French rider can really get back up into the mix. You know, they've been struggling for a long time. No, I do. You know, look, for the nature of the sport, and look, they still so the reason there are so many French wildcard teams is they still have, you know, their mandate of having X number of percentages of the peloton with French teams and French riders. So yeah, look, it's still a French race. Much as it's gone global and it's international and they haven't won it since 1985, it still is a French race, and they want them to do well, and I'd like them, you know, maybe just one, give one more winner, then they can wait another 30 years for the next one. But I'd like another Aussie first, but yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, it was for me, it was Wout van Aert. I mean, what can't that bloke do? He's out the front. He's sprinted with Michael Matthews for the bonus. Why, I don't know. I have no idea. He just can't help himself. Put a flag out, away he goes. And then he's only a handful of points off the King of the Mountains lead now. He's like, I think he's ranked third, but he's not far back. And then he's up with the front group. Chris goes away. He drops back to go back and help me mate Vinny have a go at the Pog. So what a ride. Is there anything he can't do?
No, there isn't. Yeah. I'm looking at him on the track, see if he goes on the track. I'm sure if you give him a couple of weeks, he'd be fine. Put him in a team to shoot team, Bills. He'll probably be great.
Yeah. Got a question for you, Bills. Ben Jensen wants to know, when is our honorary Aussie Sam Bills Billy making a comeback, and is he in the running for Welter? You've already come back.
Yeah, I've come back, but it has been a slow comeback, and I guess like not a smooth comeback. I started racing again late March, and I still had issues with my wrist, so that sort of delayed it again by another month, and then been coming back, doing races when I can. But now I must say that I feel finally after. Coming up 12 months since the injury, that I feel like I'm on top of things again. I feel like I'm in good condition. The wrist is pretty good. It's not perfect. I don't know if it will be ever, but it's pretty good now, and it's not affecting me as it was 2 or 3 months ago. And I'm actually going to a race tomorrow. There's a new race in Sardinia. It's called Settimana Italiana something. And it's in it's
GP.
In, yeah. It's in Sardinia. And so I leave tomorrow morning for that race. It's a 5-day stage race in Sardinia. And after that, I do Burgos, which is the first week of August, which is a lead up race for a lot of guys for the Vuelta. And I would like to be at the Vuelta. I don't know if I'm going to be, but I would like to be. And I'm certainly putting my hand up for that in the team and hoping that I can, you know, race well next this week, this coming week, and in Burgos to make the selection for that.
Sheila Richards, quick one. She says, do DS make deals with each other for win stages? Bules, you look like you've dropped a few kilos, don't you, Sheila? Looking fit. do DSs do deals?
Of course they do. Yeah. The deal's got to be done.
We're going to be a bit more technical than that. Yeah. Explain. What sort of deals do you, as she was saying, you know, like are you giving races to each other and that kind of thing? So what sort of deals are you talking about?
No, I don't. There's no doubt that teams will talk to each other about a joint effort to, you know, they've got, like, trying to beat the POG. There are a couple of teams, deciding to, you know, counter-attack. It's not so much as a written out deal, but they'll say, nudge, we need to have a few attacks here and things like that. I mean, of course you do. You have to do that.
Mm. Yeah. So, to be clear, because what I got from Sheila's question then was, you know, are they doing deals to say, well, hang on, you have this race if you can help us in the next one? I think it's more like you're saying, joint effort to work together to give both teams an advantage to go for it, but they're not doing. Well, the only sort of deals that, you know, my understanding.
I didn't read that into it. You must have a different, really different message to me. Yeah,
a younger one.
Okay.
Hey, Gay Will says, hey guys, just saw that Baden Cook is going on Survivor. Surely this needs a detour discussion. Yeah. Now, John, you spoke to him today.
He's coming on the show. Come on tomorrow, I think. He just said, let me know. I'm looking forward to coming on. So, yes, we'll have him on the next day or so.
Will he survive the detour?
Is it live or is it being filmed? And no, now
it's been filmed. He won't be able to talk about it.
It starts next Sunday.
And that was split into two teams, I see. So it was the team of Brains.
Ask him. Wait till he comes on.
No. We're talking about release. John.
Already know. He's in the Brains team, which has got me cooked. He should be in the Brawn, but obviously he's spoken to the producers and they're like, Cookie Bules. Like, he's a smart tactician when it comes to, like, he would have worked out a strategy on how to flick people and just get away with trying to win the bloody thing.
Dumb as a fox.
I tell you what, he would have had the best. He would have had the best stories on Survivor. That man can tell a story.
Oh yeah. Absolute legend.
But no, I've already got a couple. He told me a couple off the record, but very funny, very very funny. No. So I think we'll get him on tomorrow. I'll send him. I'll give him a buzz shortly.
I can almost guarantee you, if he does, if he either wins it or gets some really good recognition, the next thing he'll do is, I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here. That'll be his next thing you'll want to do. He's on a roll.
Like the bowler, he could end up doing breakfast radio and making Mozza. T. Kingo, other than pulling for Pogacar on one stage, counting what's could have been an interesting situation, what a movie star tour aims. What a movie star doing, you think, Bules?
The notorious Team GC team. They love to win the team classification, but I don't think they're anywhere near that this year. What are their aims? I guess stage ones. Yeah, it's pretty simple. Mm. Pretty simple. I'd say they haven't got anyone on GC. Oh, they've got Mass, I suppose. They'll probably try to do what they can to move Mass up towards the podium. And as we see in the GC, like with the exception of Pogacar, it's so close, that top 10. It's so close. And with big time trials still to come, a couple more mountain stages, that'll be a big target of them to put Mass on the podium. And, you saw with Valverde yesterday, he was in the breakaway. You don't often see Valverde in breakaways because normally he's banging around there in the top 10 himself. But he was up there going for the stage victory, so I'm sure they'll continue to do that as well in the coming days.
Well, they might still have a crack at Teams GC because they're sitting eighth, 56 minutes down, And you just don't know with movie star and their tactics historically, no one knows what they get up to. They might actually still think they're a chance.
Put three guys in a breakaway that wins by a while and they'll have a shot.
Voila.
Yeah. If he in the women's Giro Don, can we talk about that?
Yeah. So the final stage, and though she is Anna van der Breggen, who's won it, I think, for the fourth time. But Karina Rivers won the stage, the American. Yeah. And she dedicated it to her dad, who passed away just recently. So she said it was like an angel on her shoulder. So she just beat Lizzie Dygan and Alisa Shabby and Anna were just 3 seconds further back, so they were well clear. The SD Works girls 1, 2, 3 overall. Ashley Millman Passio at 1:43. Demi Vollering at 3:25. Lizzie was Dygan was fourth at 6:39. So she really fixed them up, and it's hard to believe that she's going to retire at the end of the year. She seems to be at the top of her game. But she's all keen for Tokyo as well. I see that Amanda Spratt pulled out for the start of the last stage, with saying that it was to prepare for Tokyo. And Brody Chapman, who writes for FDJ, had an asthma attack and had to pull out of the last stage because of a severe asthma attack, which is pretty sad. But anyway, there you go.
Anything you want to add before we wrap things up, Scooter?
A few ladies there that are focusing on Tokyo. Corin also is, she's writing for the American team, so trying to give it a crack over there as well. She's not that well known as a good climber, but she's won Tour of Flanders before. So who knows, she's coming in some pretty good form if she can get over the hills. Now, the women's road race in Tokyo isn't as, because talk about how difficult the road race is, in Tokyo, for the men, it is. They're doing, longer climb of Mount Fuji, whereas the women, they don't go up as far. They're not doing a lot of them are actually pretty disappointed that it's not going to be anywhere near as tough as what the men's race is. Kilometres, obviously distance aside, it's just the terrain isn't going to be as tough. So someone like Corin might be able to get over the shorter, punchier climbs. We'll wait and see.
Yep. Well, Kirsty was watching Kino and Bridie on Zwift riding. And Robbie, you fellas be on the bike for tomorrow night's show? I don't think so, Kirsty. I don't think so.
Now, have you ridden since the winery ride?
Nah, mate. No. Stage 16, Bills. If you looked at this straight after a rest day, what would be your initial thoughts?
That the start's going to be interesting.
Looks like very fun. Interesting.
It won't be fun. I'll tell you that. That's a long, long downhill. And
35K.
Yeah, and it's a big, wide road, and it's fast, and it's just going to be like effectively impossible for a breakaway to go unless the peloton decides to completely stop and let the breakaway, gain some time. But it's just going to be basically the break's going to go probably on that Col de Port there at the start. So you can almost eradicate that first 35K out of the stage and pretend it's not there. If you're a sprinter, you look at the stage starting at 35K and going straight up a climb, in a sense. Good day for breakaway. Yeah, a couple of climbs in the middle, long descent after the last climb. Port de Aspet is pretty hard. It is a hard climb. But after a rest day, big breakaway again. And some probably pretty dusty legs, I'd imagine.
Hey, guys, just watching what's his name? Our man?
Survivor, Baden Cook.
Ben O'Connor. A couple of times last night, he put in a little bit of a dig off the front, and then as soon as the real pressure went down, he was in trouble. And we've got 3 days in a row now in the mountains, and the in 3 days' time, they finish up Lutz Ardiden with the Col de Tourmalet before it. I'm a bit worried that he's a little bit too eager to be, he's close to the edge, obviously, because as soon as they put the pressure down, he gets dropped, and then he rides his way back on, typically, which has been great.
Ben O'Connor.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just a bit worried. I'm just hope that he at least the team or anyone, just, you know what, he could probably just wait and wait. I don't think he's going to ride himself up into second again. There's too many guys so close to him. I think he just needs to be a little bit more patient, try and conserve over these next couple of days. And knowing that you've got the Tourmalet and Lutzardiden in the last of the Pyrenees stage, it's everything. If you blow up there, you're losing 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes.
And I reckon yesterday, because the stage in Andorra yesterday was also his home roads, and I know that his partner was on the side of the road and, you know, a whole bunch of friends.
His parents were there too.
Yeah, his parents there. So, like, it's, you can kind of see how he got that rush of the blood to the head on that climb, because, you know, he's got a house just at the bottom of it. His, you know, his family's there. So I agree with you, Scooter. Hopefully, now that he's, you know, going back into the terrain he's not so familiar with, and maybe he'll be a little bit calmer. And I think for Ben, the best thing to do is literally just to follow, man. Just follow, follow, and try and go as long as you can and go further up the climb than everybody else, and ride your way back onto a podium in that way, rather than trying to attack and take time.
Have you had personal experience, Bules, where you've got a little bit too excited because people have been on the side of the road and afterwards you go, probably shouldn't have done that?
I'm not as good as Ben uphill, so I can't do it no matter how excited I am. I'm probably just, it doesn't really matter.
But in there, all right, well, I know one story. Say it's totally irrelevant, but it's a funny story about your old man Kenny, who is a character, and we're going to bring him on the social distance just to call him as he sees it. But the famous story when you won your bronze medal at the Olympics and he broke protocol, didn't he jump on the track?
Yeah, he came over.
Tell us that story.
I can't really remember it.
All right. Well, thanks, Hapules. Thanks, buddy. Been fantastic having you on the show.
That's sweet. Make it up.
All I remember asking Kenny about it at the Irish Barn Drona one night, and he basically said in Beijing or something, yeah, he was so excited. He just jumped on the track and went to run and sort of slid down the embankment and then just was giving you bear hugs and, yeah, they wanted to arrest him or whatever. And he's going, ah, it's my bloody son. Anyway, that was about it.
Yeah.
You get excited. I can remember the final of the sprint at Munich Olympics, and John Nicholson is racing Daniel Morillon, and I'm his handler. Mechanic, handler, everything, because I kept him calm. So doing everything, looking after him, I got that excited in the first heat, really close. I ran in front of the photo finish and got kicked. I kicked me out. So I couldn't help him for the second heat. I had to get someone else to help him. So there you go.
What about you, Scooter? Surely you've got a story where you got too excited and cooked it up in 6 days.
Did I tell you the bouquet of flowers story? I got a bit overexcited with the bouquet of flowers. So it wasn't Ghent, it was Bremen's 6 day. And so for all of the races, you have an elimination, team elimination, the Madisons, whatever it is, whoever wins comes to the finish line, you know, as quickly as they can, and they'll do a quick presentation with the sponsor of that event. Or that individual event within the 6 day series. And they'll give you, typically you might get a big bouquet of flowers or something, whatever. And then you just write a victory lap, crowd, you know, music, whatever. And in Bremen, Bremen's a 166 meter track, similar to the size of Ghent. And in the infield, it's absolutely packed. It's like a nightclub inside the track. So that's where all the action is. If you're in the stands, you know, you're a pure sports fan. If you're in the middle, you're just a pisshead. So I've come around the back straight with my bouquet of flowers. Instead of, you know, wanting to throw it up into the crowd, I want to throw it to, you know, all the people that are on the grog in the infield. So I've gone, give this big wind up to throw the flowers, and as I've thrown them, I've just hit my handlebars with the bouquet and dropped myself. Petals gone everywhere, like petals have gone everywhere, and I'm laying on the ground. And then all the other riders are about to come onto the track for the next event, you know, because it's just so fast, you know, you're on and off the track all the time. So they've all come around the corner. There's me laying down with just flowers all over the place. And I'm like, oh, what's happened here? I'm like, nothing.
It's like Cancellara in his last Roubaix, Bules. Didn't he go up to the top to celebrate these fans? He slid down the embankment and ended up in the water.
Yeah, he did. He went up there to give everyone a wave and a high five, and he just clipped the pedal and slid down the track.
And then ended up in a big puddle. Heyman won it. Stuart McIntosh says, I got excited when my friends were cheering me on playing on the wing at Beechworth in the Ovens and King League seconds. Did my hamstring and missed 4 weeks.
Beechworth.
There you go. Right, yes, exactly. Brewery too.
Yeah,
They've got a big gravel event, cyclocross event coming up. I think it's this weekend or next weekend.
There you go. As I always say, thanks for supporting the show, youtube.com/D2A podcast. We'll be back again tomorrow night. Scooter, let's just bring you home for the last bit of the tour. And we need to give you that real good run-up to Olympics. You've got to be You've got to be ready to go, mate. And now you've got a computer and good audio, there's no excuses on this football field today.
Yeah, there you go. Good stuff. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for joining us too, Bills on no notice. I love the fact that we bring you on and then we chat to Trish Liggett for 20 minutes and leave you hanging there.
How's the brewery going, mate?
I haven't been there for a long time, actually, at the Dos Kiwis. I haven't been out there for a number of months. I guess we had still had restrictions in place where it wasn't really a viable option for a while. When they opened up, it was time to get serious as a bike rider again. So I haven't been out there for a while, but I'll probably spend most of my days out there in the off season. looking forward to that.
Good stuff, mate. All right, thanks for joining us, guys. We'll see you again tomorrow night for our preview of Stage 16 of the Tour de France. We're into the final week. See you then.